I know it's been a little while, but you know, sometimes we need time to let the heart grow fonder. I haven't stopped. I've still been working, and I have missed so much talking to you all. While we've had some big wins, we've had a couple of losses, but you know, even with the big ones, we still seem to have more and more corruption more than ever. But maybe that's just because our eyes are now open to it all. In order to assist me, I have made a new purchase, and that is finding a bigger magnifying glass to cover all of the corruption that does not seem to stop growing. And it's going to become very useful today, because I have an exclusive deep dive I don't know if anyone's ever gotten into before. We're going to be looking into one of the most unknown secret societies in South Carolina. All of the powerful elite powerhouses in this state seem to be arm in arm with it. And you'll be floored when you hear about their globalist connections. So, without further ado, let's get into it. Welcome to the 26th episode of the Magnifying Glass Podcast. I am your host, Elena Moore, and today we're going to be diving a little bit into, well, something I actually just stumbled upon one day and got a bee in my bonnet about it and started doing a lot of research and went down a huge rabbit hole with it that led me in that rabbit hole for at least a week. I was looking through a lot of the South Carolina legislators' biographies. They have these biographies online. Anyone can go and see it at the scstatehouse.gov. And I started noticing several patterns, several societies they were in. And one of these patterns that I found was Liberty Fellowship. A lot of legislators were listing themselves as Liberty Fellows on their bios. So I was like, okay, what is this? What does it mean to be a Liberty Fellow? What is the Liberty Fellowship? The fellowship, I noticed, was not listed on the bios of legislators who are known for upholding liberty, but instead were found on those of legislators that do quite the opposite, who are really notorious for being some of the biggest parts of the establishment on both the Democrat and the Republican side. So I really started wondering, well, what does it mean to be a Liberty Fellow, and where does it come from? Well, it seems that the Liberty Fellowship is an exclusive, almost state chapter, in a way, of the Aspen Institute. Well, what is the Aspen Institute, Elena? Well, this institute is only available to the political elites that push global initiatives. But before we get into the modern day version of it, how was the Aspen Institute actually founded? This is what really started blowing my mind. So Walter Paywick, I may be saying it wrong, so humor me with some of these words, founded the Aspen Institute in 1949 to celebrate the 200th birthday of Johann Wolfgang von Goethe. Goethe was a Freemason. I'm sure that's just a coincidence. And he joined the Amalia Lodge in Weimar in March of 1780. Goethe frequently alluded to Masonic themes of universal brotherhood and was drawn to the Bavarian Illuminati. Goethe's rhetoric on evolution ended up being used by Charles Darwin and Alfred Wallace, which would create the modern day versions of evolution. On one occasion, Goethe described himself as, quote, not anti-Christian nor un-Christian, but most decidedly non-Christian, end quote. And in one of his Venetian epigram, it just happened to be Venetian epigram number 66. I'm sure that's another coincidence. Goethe listed the symbol of the cross among the four things that he most disliked. According to Nietzsche, Goethe had a, quote, kind of almost joyous trusting fatalism that has faith that only in totality everything redeems itself and appears good and justified, end quote. So that's just something to mull on as we continue. U.S. Senator Jesse Helms was a Freemason himself and even warned Americans during a Senate speech in 1987. He said, "A careful examination of what is happening behind the scenes reveals that all of these interests are working in concert with the masters of the Kremlin in order to create what some refer to as a new world order. Private organizations such as the Council on Foreign Relations, the Royal Institute of International Affairs, the Trilateral Commission, the Dartmouth Conference, and the Aspen Institute for Humanistic Studies, the Atlantic Institute, and the Bilderberg Group serve to disseminate and to coordinate the plans for this so-called New World Order in powerful business, financial, academic, and official circles," end quote. So while I wish we could go a little deeper into Freemasonry, that's something we're going to have to do on another day. I know that it's been something that has been covered by Candace Owens and other talking heads over the past few months. So if we don't get to it in a little while, I do highly recommend you start doing your own research on it, because it's always better to be able to do your own research to back it up. Don't shoot the messenger. I'm just telling you the words out of their own mouths. Now, where that leads you, that's for you to decide. So we've looked a little bit at this background. Let's just go ahead and kind of move into what the Liberty Fellowship actually is and how it is connected. So one of the things, I was looking on their website, there didn't seem to really be that much information about the Liberty Fellowship on the Liberty Fellowship website, which is something I've started to see a lot when I'm looking into exclusive clubs and different things like that. You know, they say all the right things, but they're super vague and honestly could be applied to just about everything. Just like, we want to have good leadership in the nation. Okay, well, tell me someone who's not going to say that. What makes you you? So I started looking at the videos that they had published to see if I could get any real information on the details of this fellowship. So according to the video that they posted for their 20-year anniversary, the organization was created to bring leaders of different thought together to work collaboratively and find commonality, assisted by the moderators in seminars. This video also referred to the Liberty Fellowship as a sisterhood and brotherhood, quote, that is there for you at a moment's notice, end quote. Does that sound familiar to anybody? Well, it started ringing a few bells for me, especially when it comes to really any exclusive club. They always tend to call themselves either a sisterhood or a brotherhood, and when it's co-ed like this, you know, it's referred to as both. After hearing this, I decided to look a little deeper into the board members, the staff, and the moderators at the Liberty Fellowship. Every single person that was listed in coordination with this organization held a huge amount of power in either the public sector, the private sector. In the private sector, I mean, it was by a lot, a big margin. It was probably 80% or something around that of the private sector, and the nonprofit field. So you had about, you know, roughly, and these are my estimations, I know they have specific estimations on their website, I'd say about 10% public, 10% nonprofit, and about 80% or 70% private sector. What's something even more interesting? All but just two or three individuals are listed as staff or moderators on the Liberty Fellowship, are also listed as members or employees of the Aspen Institute / the Aspen Global Leadership Network. Just keep that in mind. Also, I noticed several mentions throughout my research with both the individuals and with the Liberty Fellowship of the Riley Institute at Furman University. It's very important to point out that this is another pipeline, okay? You're going to the more research we do into these secret societies, the more you're going to see kind of the pipelines where they get these kids young before they, quote unquote, become leaders of South Carolina. They get them young, they get them in college, and then they start moving them through the pipeline from there. So I saw the Riley Institute at the Furman University. That's another deep dive for another day. But that program, just so y'all all know, was named after Richard Riley, a former South Carolina governor and the former U.S. Secretary of Education during the Clinton administration. Riley is a named partner at the Nelson Mullins Riley in Scarborough. Mind you, it's usually talked about as Nelson Mullins, but you have to remember that Riley is a named partner in that as well. This law firm is one of the most powerful law firms in South Carolina and within the Southeast. Both the Riley Institute and the Nelson Mullins law firm has either an office or a huge initiative for diversity and inclusion, you know, all of the words we normally hear. And both organizations seem to act almost like a pipeline to grow Aspen Institute globalists. All right. That's just it in a nutshell. So let's get back to the Liberty Fellowship. I took a look first at the board members that sit on the Liberty Fellowship. Now, the Liberty Fellowship was founded in 2004. It seemed that they would normally do a class of Liberty Fellows every year, but all of a sudden, for some reason, it switched to 2 years. I know they had a switch in their who was their CEO. But before we get to that, let's go ahead and look at these board members. The first board member, and I want you to listen very closely to who these board members are associated with. I'm just reading. I'm just giving you the facts. It's up to you to determine if it means anything. So Elizabeth Fleming is the first person that is named as a board member. She's now a consultant, but sits on several powerful boards like Blue Cross Blue Shield of South Carolina, CTE, which is one of North Carolina's largest privately held companies, and Davidson College. Fleming previously served as the president of Converse College from 2005 to 2016, which is a girls' college in South Carolina, and then the executive director of the Giggs Museum of Art in Charleston. Fleming is a Aspen Institute trustee and a moderator for the Aspen Global Leadership Network. The next board member that is listed is Carrie Forrest, who is the Vice President of Grant Making and Community Leadership at Coastal Community Foundation. She's been a very active member on her, and this is on her bio. I'm reading all of these, just so you know, from not only their bios on the Liberty Fellowship, but their bios on the Aspen Institute, because they've got bios everywhere. Whether or not it says that they're a member of it, there's usually a bio of them on the Aspen Institute website. So Carrie Forrest is an active member in the Charleston community, works with numerous organizations to address economic, racial, environmental, and gender disparities. It's all over her biographies. That's one thing that she seems to, I guess, be very passionate about and the reason why she moved back to Charleston. Forrest is a Furman University Riley Fellow, a Liberty Fellow, and a fellow in the Aspen Global Leadership Network. The next person who sits on their board is Michael Allen, who has spent more than 19 years in architectural business development and project management, including lead and green global sustainability projects. He's worked previously with higher education, K-12, and is a former Clemson football player. Seemed to really work his way up. Allen is listed as a speaker for a handful of events hosted by the Aspen Institute. I couldn't find his name as a biography on the Aspen Institute, so I don't know if he asked to pull that biography down, because you'll learn as we continue on that people can do that. They can ask for their biography to be pulled down from the Aspen Institute or the Liberty Fellowship. I wonder if his was, because I did not see his biography, but he was listed as a speaker on a handful of events that were hosted and put on by the Aspen Institute. Next person that I dove a little bit into is Patrick Cawley. He just happens to be the chief executive officer, which is the CEO of MUSC, the Medical University of South Carolina. He's the health and vice president for the health affairs of the Medical University of South Carolina. He is deeply entrenched in the hospital system and is a fellow in the Aspen Global Leadership Network. one, I decided to do a little deep dive on this guy. I didn't go super deep into him, just, you know, a couple of searches on social media. And man, lo and behold, what would I happen to find? An insane amount of tweets, which were his most recent tweets from January 5th, 2021, where he made several tweets on the early learning of the COVID-19 vaccine and how it must be a number one priority to get shots in arms no matter what. So you can take a quick look at some of these. I screenshotted a couple, but it gets better when you look at his profile, if that's something you would like to do. Going to move on to the next board member, which is Iris Griffin. She is the Vice President of Power for Dominion Energy and the Vice President of Finance at SCANA. She's a member of the Aspen Global Leadership Network. Who saw that coming? Jason Tompkins is another one listed as a board member, who is the President and Chief Operating Officer of the Asana Partners, a real estate investment company. He is a member of the Aspen Global Leadership Network. Octavia Williams Blake, Senior Vice President and Chief Human Resources Officer for the McLeod Health in Florence, South Carolina. Blake is a member of the Aspen Global Leadership Network. Jeff Wilson is the founder, this is the last board member that is listed, is the founder and principal of the Wilson Growth Partners LLC, a strategic advisory firm. Jeff has previously served as the Senior Vice President of Corporate Strategy and Development at Milliken and Company. I did not find his bio on the Aspen Global Leadership Network, but that does not mean that he isn't a member, just so you know. So let's move on towards the staff. This one I had a lot of fun with. There's three people listed as the staff of the Liberty Fellowship. The first one is, excuse me if I'm saying this wrong, but Tiselli Williams, we'll call her Williams for short, the new CEO of the Liberty Fellowship, and she's based out of the District of Columbia, D.C. According to her LinkedIn, she sits on 7 different boards. Mind you, she just became the new CEO over the summer. I mean, it's been within the past month or two that she became the CEO. Previously, Williams served as the Chief Development Officer for the Bipartisan Policy Center and has worked for several large nonprofits. I mean, that is the vast majority of her background, is working with a lot of money for huge nonprofits. She is an inaugural 2024 fellow of the Washington National Cathedral's Sacred Spaces, Racial Justice and Spirituality in Action. Interesting. And since we have that, I want to go ahead and show you a photo. I went through her social media, as I do sometimes. Found a photo of her all masked up, hat that says the future is female. Her mask is, it says vote on it. We're putting it up here, but if you're on audio, I'll kind of describe it to you. She's wearing all blue. You can barely see her, honestly. And she's standing beside a large poster of the Democrat sample ballot. This was posted on November 3rd, 2020. It has what the Democrat sample ballot was to vote for Joe Biden and several other people that were in her area, wherever she was working. I wonder if she was working the polls or maybe she was just voting. Who knows? But we'll go ahead and read the caption that she put on the photo. She says, "Happy hashtag election day. On this day in 1965, at the age of 50, my granny was born in America, labored in America, and taxed in America, was quote-unquote finally able as a hashtag black woman to hashtag vote in America as a result of the passage of the Voting Rights Act. 55 years later, I hashtag vote and hashtag volunteer to protect the God-given rights and freedoms of every American. When you are a proud," that's in all caps, proud, "descendants of slaves, you exercise every right in honor of all who were denied life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Hashtag God bless America. Hashtag land that I love. Voting in the 2020 U.S. election." The photo is still up on Facebook. If you go to the article I wrote, I will be linking that in the description. But if you click on that article, you can scroll down, you can see that photo, and you can click and go straight to her Facebook. For right now, it's still up. I just find it very interesting that we're supposed to be, you know, the Liberty Fellowship is supposed to be finding commonality and coming together. And we see, oh, it's supposed to be a place for all sides of the aisle. But the more we go through the individuals listed on here, whether that's staff, board members, or partnerships, you will start noticing that everyone is coming from one side. And it's all the blue side, let me tell you that, the extreme blue. I'm talking about the global leadership kind of blue-green, not just the red and blue that we know of. So let's go ahead and move on to the next person. Summer Dixon is the Strategic Communications Director of the Liberty Fellowship. Previously, Dixon led marketing for the Riley Institute at Furman University. Summer's user profile is listed on the Aspen Global Leadership Network, but it does not make clear whether or not she's a member. Summer lives in Greenville with her wife and her two children. Here's a photo of them together. Next is Janice Wilkins. Janice Wilkins is the seminars manager of the Liberty Fellowship and has been with the organization since its founding. Prior to this position, Wilkins served as the faculty administrative assistant to the Wofford College Department of Biology. Janice's user profile is listed on the Aspen Global Leadership Network, but it does not make it clear if she is a member. Also, Wofford College is deeply entrenched with the Aspen Institute. Isn't it interesting that Furman and Wofford seem to have such deep ties with a globalist network? Now let's go on to the moderators. Todd Brayfogel, I think is how you say his name, is the executive director of seminars at the Aspen Institute and is based out of Denver, Colorado. Brayfogel has worked for the Aspen Institute since 2008 and sits on several nonprofit boards. He's done a ton of work with the Aspen Institute. I actually watched a video of this guy just to kind of get a feel for him because his photo kind of creeped me out. Not, you know, just saying, personally, I was a little creeped. So I said, you know what? Let me give this guy a chance. Let me watch a video of him. And honestly, it was disturbing. The way his mannerism were, and he would not stop moving his hands in different ways and just walking really weird as he was giving a presentation. I don't know. Personal perspective here. You may think different. I'm just saying the guy gave me the creeps. Next person that's listed as a moderator is John Deasy, who is the president of the Bezos Family Foundation. Let me say that again. The Bezos Family Foundation that is partnered with Save the Children and the Aspen Institute. Oh, who saw that coming? Not me. Deasy is also a moderator for the Aspen Institute and an Aspen Fellow of the first class of the Pahara Fellowships. Now we start getting into even more juicy stuff. You didn't think we got into it juicy before. We're getting into it now. John Cannonview is listed as a moderator. He just happens to be a justice for the South Carolina Supreme Court. Few served as the chief judge in the South Carolina Court of Appeals from 2010 to 2016 and is a member of the Aspen Global Leadership Network. I'm sure that's just a coincidence that he also has been sitting on the Supreme Court of South Carolina. The next moderator, oh man, this is going to be a hard one to pronounce, Sehal Gulati, is the chief growth officer for Now, a crypto payments company. Gulati currently lives in New York City and is a member of the Aspen Global Leadership Network. Do you not find it interesting that a lot of these people that work for the Liberty Fellowship that's supposed to be just in South Carolina do not live in South Carolina? Side note. The next moderator listed is Tanya Hitt. She's the executive director of the Henry Crown Fellowship. What's the Henry Crown Fellowship, Elena, you ask? Well, it just happens to be a program with the Aspen Institute and is a member of the Aspen Global Leadership Network. Another fellowship within a fellowship. Within another fellowship. I think that's how that works. Next moderator is Danielle Hawley, who is the president of the Mount Holyoke College. Holyoke College, and is the co-chair of the board of of the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights. Holly is a moderator for the Aspen Institute Executive Leadership Seminars and is a Liberty Fellow through the Aspen Global Leadership Network. That's interesting. Next moderator is Stace Lindsay, the president of Fusion Venture Partners, a firm that he founded to, quote, bring together. That's what it says in his bio. This firm is to bring together. Do with that information as you will. I mean, that's what I keep telling y'all. They just say so many words, and the words mean nothing. I mean, it just, to me, it just yells universalism. But who knows? Maybe I'm wrong. Lindsay is the co-founder of the Aspen Institute's Central American Leadership Initiative and has served on the executive committee of the Aspen Network for Development Entrepreneurs. Lindsay is a Henry Crown Fellow, a member, and a senior moderator of the Aspen Global Leadership Network. Next guy, Leighton Lord. Leighton Lord is the chairman of the Nexen Pruitt and the founder and managing director of Nexen's Communication and Crisis Management affiliate, NP Strategy LLC. I recognized this guy and this company when I came upon it because back last year, I believe it was, I did a story about NP Strategy, or that mentioned NP Strategy, which is the same organization that Richland County Economic Development Department hired. South Carolina government seems to hire NP Strategy quite a lot. But Richland County hired them to blacklist residents, literally to research residents in Blythewood who were vocal about the Scout Motors destruction in their community. Said, hey, NP Strategy, we want to pay you like $25,000 a month or whatever it was to go through the social medias of anybody that's speaking bad about Scout Motors or has any concerns and is not in full absolute 100% of this entity. I want you to research them and create a listening report, a monthly listening report that shows screenshots of everything they said and put them on basically a list that we should be watching. Mind you, one of the legislators ended up on that list because he was listening to residents and said, hey, maybe we should look a little into this. There's a lot of people that are really worried about their backyard getting destroyed and their wells being contaminated. So, just keep an eye out for NP Strategy. I find it very interesting who the South Carolina government hires and these individual counties because they seem to replicate themselves in who they work with. Leighton is the chairman of the Santee Cooper, the governor's appointee on the Bureau of Ocean and Energy Management Offshore Renewable Energy Task Force. Okay, so Leighton Lord obviously is tight with Henry McMaster. Sure, it's unrelated. Leighton Lord is a Riley Institute Diversity Fellow, serves on the Board of Governors of the Palmetto Club. Ah, another exclusive club. Who saw that coming? Oh, and by the way, he's a moderator and member of the Aspen Global Leadership Institute. Next person listed as moderator is Ranji Nagaswamy, who is the Chief Strategy and Chief Commercial Officer of SVP Global, a global investment firm. Interesting. Nagaswamy has held several leadership roles in investments, including serving as chief investment advisor in the administration of Mayor Michael Bloomberg in the city of New York. She founded the Aspen Finance Leaders Fellowship and is an Aspen Institute and Aspen Global Leadership Network member, moderator, and Henry Crown Fellow. So she got everything and then created another one. I'm sure Aspen's very proud. Windsor Westbrook Sherrill, next person listed as moderator, who is an associate vice president for the health research at Clemson University. Oh, look, another university. Was that our fourth one at this point? And chief science officer at the Greenville Health System. Sherrill is a member of the Aspen Global Leadership Network. John Simpkins, we're almost done. just letting you know. I got this guy and someone else. John Simpkins is president and CEO of MDC Inc. in Durham, North Carolina, which is an organization that is, quote, working on behalf of racial equity and economic mobility in the South, end quote. Simpkins formerly served as vice president of the Aspen Global Leadership Network. I mean, I already wrote this out, but let me tell you one thing. The more I look into it, it's just, it's hilarious. The constant replications of the people for this network. I mean, you want to talk about having commonality, but everyone's in the same secret society that only the elites can be a part of. All right. Simpkins was appointed to the Senior Executive Service in the Obama administration for the U.S. International Development and Deputy General Counsel for the White House Office of Management and Budget. Wow. Aspen Institute got so lucky. I mean, the Liberty Fellowship got so lucky with all of these board members. I mean, I know how it is starting an organization in South Carolina. Let me tell you one thing. It is back-breaking work. It's exhausting. And a lot of times, you know, it's a thankless job. It's a labor of love. But the Liberty Fellowship, man, they must have did something right. Because I don't know how they found all these people to be on their board and all be on the same page about everything. Because let me tell you one thing. It's hard to do that. Really. Hats off to them. Don't know how they did it. Maybe it was because they were an affiliate program of the Aspen Institute. I'm sure that's unrelated. So we get to our last person that is listed as a moderator, which is Anne-Marie Steritz. This is the lady who is the immediate past president of and CEO of the Liberty Fellowship. She's the one, I don't know what happened, but she's the one that left, became a moderator. And then Williams moved in just this past summer, pretty much. She's has served as the president and CEO of the South Carolina Council on Competitiveness and has worked in positions at the University of South Carolina and the South Carolina Technical College System. All right, number five here. We've got Furman, Wofford, USC, Clemson, and now the South Carolina Technical College System. She is a certified moderator for the Aspen Institute and sits on the board of the Columbia Museum of Art. I just wonder what it takes to be certified by the Aspen Institute. Like, do you have to sell your firstborn or something? I just might be completely off the walls, but the more research you do on secret societies, the more you really expect that. Because a lot of them do it. Alrighty, so the lifetime partners. On the website of the Liberty Fellowship, they've listed lifetime partners who have made massive donations. So they're on a donor list. There are major businesses that are on this list. So we're going to name just a few of them. Let me know if they ring any bells. They have contributed, by the way, since Liberty Fellowship's inception. The Boeing Company, Blue Cross Blue Shield of South Carolina, Dominion Energy / Scana, Milliken and Company, the South State Bank. Interesting, South State Bank is a lifetime partner. The Duke Endowment, Nelson Mullins Riley Scarborough, Prisma Health, Wells Fargo, and Wofford College. And there's plenty of others. We'll put that up on the screen for you. You can also find it in the link on the article as well. I know we have gone through a lot already, and you're probably thinking, wow, you know, what does it really take to be a Liberty Fellow? How can I become a Liberty Fellow? You must be a resident in South Carolina between the ages of 30 and 47. I find that interesting, especially when the vast majority of the people of their moderator staff and others are outside of South Carolina, but don't worry, if you want to be a fellow, you have to be in South Carolina. You must be between the ripe ages of 30 and 47 before all of those beliefs have fully sunk in, you know, just so we can get a hold of you right at the end and really make sure you spend the rest of your life doing what we want you to do. The nominee must also be open to ideas, be an accomplished leader, and be, I find this interesting, be at a quote inflection point, end quote, be willing to challenge existing normative behaviors with actionable ideas, and contribute effectively to the seminar experience by listening and learning from their peers. So I took a look at the seminar schedule, which gets even more fun for the class of 2025, because while it is 2024, I did a little digging to see who the class of 2025 was going to be. Well, they announced the class of 2025 in 2023. So I guess some of them may not be qualified by the time it's 2025. I'm not really sure how that works, but weird. The seminar schedule for the class of 2025 includes week-long seminars related to the challenge of leadership. Another one that is exclusively an Aspen seminar. The third seminar being a choice between 5 Aspen Institute globalization seminars, whether it's in the U.S. or abroad. I mean, you really can't make this stuff up. And the other week-long seminars titled The Promise of Leadership and The Call to Action. In order to see the class of 2025, you can find that in the link in the article as well. So, who are some of the most notable Liberty Fellows? Well, I really wish we could do a deep dive on all 350 active fellows that have been listed by the Liberty Fellowship. You know, I also wonder who has had their name taken off these websites as well. But I'd have to find a book publisher to do all of that, and that'll be another episode for another day. But instead, let's take a look at some of probably the most notable, powerful political figures. I'm not even going to dive into the public and private sector, or the private sector right now. We're just going to take a look at some of the politicians involved in this thing. Former U.S. House Representative and current Nelson Mullins Riley Scarborough partner, Trey Gowdy. Trey Gowdy is a huge name in South Carolina. He was the class of Liberty Fellows of 2007. Current U.S. Senator Tim Scott was a Liberty Fellow in class 2009. South Carolina Senate Majority Leader Shane Massey came out of the class of 2011. South Carolina 5th Judicial Circuit Judge Robert Hood came out of 2019. And little side note, you get mentors in the Liberty Fellow. So a previous person has mentored you as you're going through your class. Who, you ask, mentored the South Carolina 5th Judicial Circuit Judge Robert Hood? One of the most very, very powerful lawyer in the area. Well, he was mentored by Trey Gowdy. Interesting. Another person listed as a Liberty Fellow is South Carolina Representative Weston Newton. He came out of the class of 2015. He's probably one of the biggest globalists, the poster childs for globalism in the state of South Carolina. He's a great talker, let you know that. But he seems to push a lot of globalist agendas within our state legislature. Well, he graduated in the class of 2015 and was mentored by Pat McKinney. Pat McKinney, mind you, was the former gubernatorial candidate of John Warren's running mate. Another person listed is South Carolina Representative Beth Bernstein, who is a notable Democrat in the South Carolina State House. Current South Carolina Attorney General Alan Wilson came out of the class of 2017. Thomas McElveen, South Carolina Senator, came out of the class of 2018. And of course, one of the last people I want to mention is South Carolina Representative Micah Caskey, came out of the class of 2020. He's probably one of, if you watch the videos and you see his Twitter page, he's not a nice guy. Let's just say that. And it's very, very evident in almost everything he does. He came out of the class of 2020. When I was writing this article, we reached out to the Liberty Fellowship headquarters regarding an interview. Did not hear back. Still have not really heard back before this article was published. And, you know, now we're doing this the week after. We also reached out to Jeff Wilson, one of the board members who lives in Spartanburg, and he declined an interview. Called a few other people. They didn't pick up, but you know, a girl can try, but there's only so much I can try with when none of the members want to really talk about it, at least the ones we reached out to. It's really worrying that such a large global entity, and it's not me making these connections, by the way. At the bottom of the Liberty Fellowship website, this is literally what it says. At the bottom, it says it has the Liberty Fellowship logo, and it has the Aspen Global Leadership Network logo, and it says Liberty Fellowship is affiliated with the Aspen Global Leadership Network. I mean, it really is this state chapter of the Masonic Aspen Institute. You can't get more clear at this point. It's really worrisome that it seems like South Carolina is the experimental state for the Aspen Institute to start opening up a state chapter that they call something so hypocritical as liberty, when the Aspen Institute is very clearly a globalist organization that is pushing for the New World Order. I mean, it's simple as that. And you have a ton of very powerful people around the world that are members of this network. So it's just something to keep an eye out on. The more we do research into it, the more we find out. And if you found this interesting, I highly recommend you to start doing some of your own research. Let me know in the comments if you want to see more of this, because I had a lot of fun with it. And I think it teaches us all a little something of who is puppeteering, or maybe puppeteering, the powerful elites within our own state, let alone on the national and international level. So definitely let me know in the comments if you want to see more of it. If you don't want to, if you think this is just a coincidence, I don't care. I want to hear it. The question that you can ponder on is, how much power do they actually have over the leaders in South Carolina? Why is South Carolina, who is a Republican supermajority, but the voting records of our legislators, especially those with an R beside their name, it says otherwise. They vote right along with the rest of them, whether they're Democrat or Republican. You always must watch their actions, not their words. It makes a lot more sense looking into all of these connections now when we compare it to the voting records of those people that are the legislators that voted for the Health Czar bill that was connected to the World Health Organization. It's the same people that are listed with the Liberty Fellowship and the Aspen Institute. Thank you for joining us today on the Magnifying Glass podcast. We delve deep, bringing the overlooked into focus and magnifying the stories that matter to you. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe, rate, and share. Help us shine a light on even more discoveries. I'm your host, Elena Moore, and remember, sometimes the smallest details make the biggest difference. And if you have a big magnifying glass, you can get a lot more done with it. Until next time, keep looking closer.